Blog Talk Radio.
This is Lean Keys Real Talk. Hold on one second. Whoops, computers went. Caps lock on. Sorry about that. Yo.
Yo.
Yo, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
My bad. I had a little bit of a difficulty there right now. Right when I went to go type in that password, my computer went to sleep, so that's my bad. Bad timing. How you doing tonight?
Oh man, I'm good. How about yourself, bro?
I'm good. Great. They're saying we're going to get like 9 feet of snow.
I saw that on the news.
You guys already got snow out there?
Man, it snowed. What's today? Today is Wednesday, right?
Wednesday.
Yeah, it snowed like Sunday night. Well, Saturday into Sunday. And then Sunday into Monday. Yeah, so yeah, we don't. This is about our fifth or sixth snow already.
Wow, so you guys, okay, because we had snow here one day so far, and it was like a dusting. We barely even had snow. It was our first, like, big snow day.
Yeah, we done had about five already.
Yeah, well, I think snow. You guys are used to having, that's the usual for you guys, eh?
Yeah, man.
That's the usual out there.
Yeah, normally, you know, it normally don't snow a lot, and we normally start to get really bad about February and March. February and March are, like, really bad. But, you know, it's a necessary evil living out here, dog. You got to deal with the weather, man. But, you know, one thing about out here, you know, we probably one of the cities that get the most sunlight, too. So it's just the way it goes.
Evan, have you had any snow out there out your way yet?
Yeah, I don't know about, like, the main roads, but, like, my street is it's pretty covered.
Wow. Yeah, we're supposed to start getting snow tonight over here. We're supposed to get like a foot and a half, I think.
Where you at?
But
I'm in Jersey.
Oh, okay. You sound like a Jersey guy too.
Thank you.
Go ahead,
Keith. What's that supposed to mean? What you trying to say?
His accent, just like you got a Boston accent.
Hey, I don't hear a Boston accent.
I'm quite sure you don't.
Okay, well, there's a ton of stuff for us to talk about tonight. First of all, I mean, there's many ways that I could attack this. You guys want? I mean, we could talk about that unbelievable flyweight title fight we just watched. We could talk about that first. Do you feel like that needs to go first, or we know that there's – what do you guys think?
I'm good with
you
that.
You want to talk about Rumble? We could talk about Rumble. Rumble's going to Bellator.
Y'all talk about that. Y'all just going to give me about like 5 minutes, all right? Y'all go right ahead, all right? Thank you.
All right, let's go ahead and talk about Rumble.
Okay, so – Rumble's coming back, and he's going to go fight in Bellator. Now, I'm kind of confused, first of all, why he's not going back to the UFC and why he's going to go fight with Bellator. I mean, I know there's interviews out there, and maybe he's already explained this. I'm sure every journalist is trying to interview Rumble Johnson right now. I feel like this is a huge story. If you're a hardcore fan, this is a huge story. And I'm sure he's explained the reasoning why. I just don't know what it is yet. Have you heard anything about it, why he chose to go over there instead of go back to the UFC?
Nah, man. Actually, I was just about to Google and see could I find anything. But if I had to guess, I would say it's money, dog. Because if you look,
No, go ahead.
Because if you look, everybody that leaves the UFC and go to Bellator, they make more money. But, and plus at the same time, you can get more money with your sponsorships because you're able to do your self-marketing and stuff like that. But I just don't understand why Rumble would go to Bellator, though. That's kind of weird that, you know, he would go to Bellator instead of coming back to the UFC. But I'm trying to find something that make answer our question, but I haven't seen anything to date of why he went to Bellator instead of coming back to the UFC, though.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about why he would do that. I feel like, especially now, I mean, maybe there was some behind-the-scenes situation that we don't know about, but, I mean, especially now, when you look at the light heavyweight division, I mean, he could – I know he was a middleweight at one point. I thought that he was walking around at heavyweight weight, so I'm kind of even surprised that he would come back at light heavyweight. I thought he would come back at heavyweight. But if you look at the light heavyweight division, I mean, the guy that he – I'm pretty sure Rumble only ever lost two fights. I'm pretty sure, I mean, maybe I could be wrong, but I thought he only had two losses on his record, and both of those were to DC. I thought he only lost to DC. And we obviously know DC is not in the picture anymore in the UFC period. Never mind. I mean, he's not been in the light heavyweight picture in quite a while. You know, probably 2 years, I want to say, he hasn't been in light heavyweight pitches, so I'm just surprised that Rumble wouldn't look at that. I mean, if you look at the light heavyweight division, I feel like right now Rumble has a huge opportunity if he wanted to go back to the UFC to become world champion. I mean, don't get me wrong, pretty easy path to becoming a world champion at Bellator as well. I mean, especially when they hardly even have a light heavyweight division. I mean, I guess that could be why that he – I guess that maybe I answered my own question right there. Maybe that's why he wants to go to Bellator because he feels like. I'm not saying. What is it?
Okay. He said, basically, I got so much going on in my life. This is from MMA Fighting that he did an interview with. He said, I got so much going on in my life. And my life has taken me in a different direction. I've been out for a while anyway, and it was pretty much up with the UFC contract. So then I dug a little bit deeper. This is probably why. He says, there was no dispute. I'm just going a different route. I have a different type of business. I'm in the cannabis business now and all that stuff and just trying to do multiple things. UFC, they're a lot more strict than a lot of other promotions, and that's just the name of the game with them. That's business. So basically, I guess he's trying to say because he's in the cannabis business that the UFC would be strict on him, and whereas Bellator wouldn't. So, but I think there are like other fighters in the UFC that's in the cannabis business. Sugar Sean. I want to say the Diaz brothers. This what he's saying, though, bro.
I mean, well, I mean, maybe – I don't know what he does. I don't know if he has a grow-up or if he's in the business of – he owns a cannabis store. Maybe that's what he means by that. I mean, at the same time, if he's saying that he likes to smoke weed and UFC is not going to tolerate that because we all know USADA still in 2020 gives out fighters suspensions for testing positive for marijuana, that he wouldn't be able to smoke weed if he fought in the UFC. I mean, if that's what he's trying to say, that's kind of hilarious, actually. That's actually pretty funny. I kind of wish he, I mean, I know it's the PR and everything, and maybe his manager probably told him to put it in that way, but that would be funny if he just said, hey, I like to smoke weed, and the UFC, you know, and USADA wouldn't allow me to do that, so I want to be able to fight and smoke weed, and if that's the case, that's hilarious. That's really funny. That'd be epic, actually. But at the same time, I mean, if he did want to be, I'll say this, if he did want to be a world champion, Bellator does have an easy route because they have like three guys in their light heavyweight division right now.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
I agree with
that. I couldn't even name, I don't even think I could name four light heavyweights in Bellator.
You got Bader, you got Phil Davis, you got God damn. I just had three in my head. Bader, Phil Davis, Corey Anderson, and the guy that just beat Ryan Bader for the light heavyweight belt. I don't even know who he is, but yeah, man, they light heavyweight division isn't that deep. But at the same time, I think Rumble, the only person in the UFC light heavyweight division that will probably wrestle him will probably be, shit, who? I don't even know who will wrestle him. All them guys try to stand and bang, and they kickboxers, so a lot of them play right into his hands in the UFC light heavyweight division right now.
Well, that's what I was trying to say, is that I feel like the light heavyweight division, if he were to be there, you know, if he didn't like smoking weed or whatever the case may be, and he was going to fight there, I feel like a lot of those guys are the stylistic fights that he would want. You know, most of those top 15 light heavyweights, you know, if you're a better striker than them, you could beat them. You really don't need much more than that. I mean, besides maybe Anthony Smith, like Anthony Smith might try to, you know, might try to tap you, you know, but that's not even that often from him either. I mean, he doesn't even always use his ground game. So, but most of those other guys, I mean, even Bukovic, I've never really, I don't think I've seen any other style from him. I've seen his boxing and that's it, which is okay. I just think that if Rumble did want to fight there, I think he would have a ton of success in the light heavyweight division right now.
Yeah, man. To be honest, I was shocked when I read it that he had signed with Bellator. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, the first thing I thought about was money. But then when I just read that article, it kind of like makes sense now. But I think a lot of guys, until the UFC gonna have to start letting people self-market themselves, man, because putting them in that promotional box where the UFC does all the promotion and all that, and they don't let people like advertise their sponsors, that rubs a lot of the fighters the wrong way, and it takes a lot of money out of their pocket, which I actually wrote about in my article that the UFC should probably get more lenient on.
So, Evan, you back?
Yep, how's it going?
So just to give you like a introductory, I don't know if you heard it a few minutes ago, but we kind of just started kicking off talking about Rumble, and we kind of looked up why he decided to go to Bellator and not come back to the UFC's light heavyweight division, where, like we were just saying, you know, where we feel like there would be a lot of stylistic matchups that would work out well for Rumble. So we were just kind of, you know, tossing that back and forth and just looking at that.
No, I get it. You know, it's I was listening to what you were saying also about, like, how it's hard to name, you know, Bellator's 205 division. There's not much, you know, depth to it. Like, they have a great, you know, they have some names, and I actually posted someone on Twitter posted about it, of their light heavyweight division, and it actually were a lot of suitable names, but I freaking can't find it. But just for the, you know, the sake of it, I don't know if you guys mentioned at light heavyweight that, like, technically, apparently, Yoel Romero is supposed to fight at light heavyweight in Bellator.
I saw that, and they talking about that maybe their first fight, that Yoel's and Rumble's first fight might be against each other. That's a dope fight, but it's only a dope fight if Rumble gets taken down and he can get back up, and if Yoel is willing to kind of sort of stand and bang with Rumble, which most people don't want to do. So it's a dope fight if we can get a little bit of everything in the fight. Well, where we get Yoel taking him down, we get Yoel and Rumble willing to trade shots. So, but I think, like I put on Twitter today when somebody sent it, I think Rumble wins because I think Yoel would try to stand and bang with him, because we really haven't seen Yoel really institute much wrestling in his game in his last couple of fights. And if you don't wrestle Rumble Johnson, he's going to knock your head off your shoulders.
Very true. Very, very true. No, I'm sure you guys were saying, you know, we're probably very excited to, you know, to see, you know, Rumble back, to see Yoel, you know, just, you know, hopefully they're just rejoiced and, you know, revamped, refreshed, a bunch of R words, and just happy to, you know, fight again. I'm excited. It's great signing for Bellator, and yeah, just can't wait to see them fight. Hopefully soon.
Okay, so I think at this point we got to talk about Tony Ferguson. What happened to Tony Ferguson? Okay, I'm disgusted. I am absolutely disgusted at Tony Ferguson. What was that? I'm so disappointed, all right? And I will say this now. The next time he fights, I will not be the hype. My hype for it will be almost non-existent the next time he fights, because I can't take it. The hype that I have had the last two times that he has fought, the high that I reached from the hype, and then the low point that I reached seeing him lose in his last two fights was very depressing. It was a very depressing thing, and I feel like it put a huge damper on both of those nights. When he lost to Gaethje, that was the last fight of the night. I walked out with my head down. I went home sad. Okay, and then he fought this time, and luckily there was another fight after it, and it was a, you know, an all-time classic, so that brought my mood up. But I was very, very sad and irritated to see him lose again, and not only lose, but get completely and utterly dominated for pretty much the entire three rounds. I am disgusted, and I don't even know what to say about that loss from Tony Ferguson. I don't even know how to break that down. Do you guys have any thoughts on that fight?
Go ahead, Evan.
Well, first things first, you know, congratulations to Charles Oliveira for one hell of a performance. Like, absolutely unbelievable performance that I don't think anyone really expected that. Like, you know, I think a lot of people, including myself, still had Tony Ferguson winning that fight. Because if you look at Charles' record, he just didn't do well against the big names when the pressure was on. But I believe the article you sent me, Keys, about how Dan Hooker calling for Charles Oliveira, I believe that had something to do with how Dan was saying that Tony is a crowd fighter. And honestly, I believe that. I truly believe that Tony he feeds off that energy and just that crowd roar and just the screaming when a punch lands and just all that energy. I just don't think he was able to wake up. Kind of like how Woodley talked about how he felt like a bad dream. He just couldn't throw a punch and he just couldn't get going. That's what it seemed like. It just seemed like Tony, I don't know. It was just sad to see. He looked just sad that he had the fight in him anymore. But I don't know what's next for him after this one. What do you think, Lee?
When Hooker sent that out, the first person I thought about was Keys, because Keys actually said that after the Gaethje fight. And in some kind of way, I don't believe when he sent it, I was like, man. I was like, Keys said this the last time. And then when Hooker said it, it kind of confirmed what Keys said. So I retweeted it to him. But, hey, man, hats off to Charles Oliveira, man. He had a good game plan. He wasn't going to stand and bang with Tony. He was going to make Tony fight off his back. And, you know, for all the crazy stuff Tony be doing and his training and stuff, none of that shit matters if you can't fight off your back when you get taken down. Not everybody is going to stand and bang with you and have a kickboxing match with you. And Charles Oliveira came in there and basically took it to him from the time the bell rang to start the fight to the time the bell rang to end the fight. And I was impressed with him. Although he really didn't do that much damage when he was on top, really, because Tony was doing a lot of blocking and posturing. He was just getting basically, he couldn't get back to his feet. I thought there was a couple times where the ref should have stood him back up because Charles really wasn't doing anything. But, you know, something that I had found out today, the day of the fight, was that Tony had switched camps. I didn't even know he had switched camps. So I don't know what I'm not going to say that was an excuse for him losing. But I think Tony is one of them guys that he likes to react to what you're doing. But I think he needs to become the guy that goes first. What I mean by that is you take it to your opponent instead of letting your opponent bring it to you and you react. I think it's time for him to switch his game up. Start being the one that goes second. Start leading the dance.
So you think he needs the fans back?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think he needs to stop being second, stop being the one that reacts to what your opponent is doing, and be the one that makes your opponent react to what you're doing. There's a lot of times when you watch him fight, he lets the fight come to him instead of taking the fight to his opponent.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, I mean, to piggyback off that, I mean, they always say, like, no matter, I mean, when you fight a wrestler, I mean, the guys always point out, like, I mean, and this is true. I don't think this is, you need to be an expert to point this out. This is very obvious, but, I mean, it just presents the opportunity. The start of every round, you can get taken down or dominated, you know, and be in bottom position, not even in bottom position, just being in, you're not even doing, you're just limp. You're just a vegetable. You could just be getting dominated, you know, by a wrestler for an entire round. But when you start the next round, you started on the feet. And that's every round. I mean, Tony had, I mean, what I saw was him getting dominated by Oliveira's, you know, top control for three rounds. You know, he had the first round of that, you know, the top of the second round to come out like a bat out of hell. And then in the third round, again, had the opportunity to come out like a bat out of hell. And it just seemed like I didn't see that from him. You know, maybe I need to watch the fight again, but I just didn't see that from him. I feel like if he was a guy who felt like, okay, you know, I have a point to prove here. This is a fight that I need to win, you know, and he just comes out of the first round after getting dominated, you know, and he can't do anything about what's happening in this fight. Come out, you know, like a bat out of hell. That's what I would expect from Tony Ferguson. I would want him to come out flying with a kick like Verdum used to do. Verdum used to come flying across the cage with that flying kick that he used to do, and it was epic. I would have wanted to see that from Ferguson, you know, or something of this, or come out with a, you know, Masvidal style, comes out with a flying knee, flying across the cage with a flying knee. I mean, no matter what the move is, come out running across the cage. Like, I would have thought he would have had more, you know, I know you're tired after getting, when someone, you know, a wrestler is dominant, you know, when they say someone's on top of you, their weight, it's tiring to have that, but I don't know. I would just think after you lose, you know, to Gaethje, come back, you know, would want to really win that fight. I would think, I don't know, I just, it, to me, it didn't seem like that was him in there. It just, I don't know who that was. It did not seem like Ferguson did.
I mean, it's kind of like what you said, you know, I'm going to say probably after the first round, when you're in a three-round fight and the way he got dominated in the first round, his coaches should have told him, hey, we need you to come out like a bat out of hell to open up this second round. We need to start applying some pressure. And I don't think that was ever said to him. I don't even think his coaches ever said anything to him that was really, well, I was like, oh, man, that's some good coaching. That's some good advice that I can recall.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But either way, I think this is another question. I mean, we could talk about Charles Oliveira. I think we should talk about that too. But first, being that Tony Ferguson, I feel like is more of, I at least know I'm more of a fan of Tony Ferguson now. I'm more interested in what he does next. So I want to talk about Tony Ferguson's next matchup. But I think it's also important to look at Charles Oliveira's next matchup, because beating that name, I feel like you could argue that he's there for the title, that he's right there for the title, that he's the number one contender. But at the same time, Ferguson is not the number one contender. I mean, he's not – I think he was like the number three or number four when Oliveira beat him.
He was number three.
You know, and yeah, so I don't think it's the same clout, you know what I mean? I don't know if it's the same level of – okay, you beat that guy, so you're right there. Like, I don't think Ferguson, because Ferguson has since dropped. I mean, he was coming off a loss. You know, Gaethje already kind of took that from Ferguson. Ferguson was that guy, and Gaethje beat that guy and immediately got the title shot. You know? I mean, I get that was for an interim title, but Ferguson was that guy at the time to beat. You know? And Gaethje kind of took that away from him, you know, and so he was coming off a loss. So Oliveira, I hate to say it, might need to win one more to get that title shot, you know. I think one more off, you know, a top two. I mean, Oliveira, I don't know who they're going to have him fight, because there's really nobody there to fight, but I do think he needs one more.
I think it's going to be Hooker, man. I think Hooker, I think he put it out there. I think Hooker is lobbying to fight Charles Oliveira. And as much as I don't like Hooker, I don't even know why I don't like this guy, but I think it's gonna be Oliveira versus Hooker, man.
Right. I have a disagreement. I believe personally that Hooker is actually gonna fight Chandler and that Charles Oliveira is gonna fight Justin Gaethje.
No.
Wow. I thought it was gonna be Chandler and Gaethje.
I strongly disagree with that.
I'm not seeing it.
I just don't think any of the context clues it.
All right, Evan, so why do you think that?
To be frank, I saw an article about Hooker, and he said he's got a next fight coming up, and he said he's very, 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 very excited about it. And, like, sure, I'm sure he's probably very excited to fight Charles Oliveira, but the way he made it sound like, I just don't think it's the Charles fight. It just makes sense to me. You know, I'm assuming here, I'm making a strong assumption, but I don't know. I think it'd be a nice curveball to see Hooker get the Chandler fight. You know, give Chandler that's not an easy fight, but not the Justin Gaethje fight. And Charles Oliveira is going to be ranked third now, in the rankings, and Justin needs a fight to get a title shot. So I think it makes sense, and I think it makes more sense now, with all the delay that has, come with Chandler's debut. You might as well just do Hooker. Like, it should have been Tony Ferguson. It should be Gaethje, but chances are it's going to be Dan Hooker.
Well, you really didn't make me believe that too much, but it do kind of. but it do kind of sort of make sense. But I think for Chandler's sake, especially with him wanting to have eyes on his first fight, I think it possibly should be Gaethje. But at the same time, the UFC do want Chandler in the title picture, so they may think that he will have a better chance of beating Hooker than Gaethje. So, I could ride with that a little bit. I could ride with it a little bit.
So, Evan, who did you say is going to fight who? Say it again.
Charles.
Gaethje and
fight.
Oliveira and Chandler and Hooker.
Chandler and Hooker. Okay. So, I just don't see why they would, I just don't see why Hooker would come out today and call out Oliveira if he is fighting Chandler. I just don't understand it. And not even that, but I think Oliveira is just in the open right now. I don't think he has a fight. I don't think the UFC really knew what was going to happen, and it just match made, ahead of Ferguson and Oliveira not knowing who was going to win. I don't think they went ahead and said, oh, the winner of that's going to fight this guy. I mean, I guess that could have happened, but I don't think they really knew who was going to win. So, I mean, if we're waiting on having, winners fight winners, which is what I typically like to see, and I would think that they wouldn't have known. They would say, this is a really evenly matched fight, so we got to wait to see what happens. I mean, maybe there was a contract waiting for the winner, so Oliveira could be in talks for a fight right now. Maybe he's in talks for a fight with Dan Hooker. I think that's more likely a scenario based on the call-out. And I think Chandler would rather fight somebody who, if he beats them, he's fighting for the title next. And I just don't think beating Dan Hooker brings you to the title fight.
I think if Chandler wins his first fight, it doesn't matter who's it against. He's going to be in a title hunt. I think it might not be, you know, it might not be on the up and up, but I'm quite sure the UFC didn't have him be the standby for the Khabib fight just for him to have to fight a couple fights to get in the title picture. So I think if he wins his first fight, he's going to be in the title. He's going to be right there for that, either the interim title or to fight the winner of Connor and Dustin. But I'm thinking it's going to be an interim title fight. So, I just think there's some sideline dealing with the UFC and Chandler, man. Ever since he signed his contract and was the standby, that can't be ignored.
So, okay. So I have a question here. So, actually, I have two questions, but they're both about the lightweight division. What I wanted to ask was, point A, what if Chandler goes in there and loses his first fight? What if he goes and fights Dan Hooker, completely underestimates him, because we're all, you know, a lot of people are looking at Chandler like he's Superman or something, or a guy who, you know, hasn't been knocked out in his last two fights, or in his last three fights, rather. And, I think he was knocked out twice, two times in the last four fights, or knocked out twice in his last three fights. So if we're looking at Chandler in the realistic sense of the guy has been knocked out twice in his last four fights, what if he goes in there versus Dan Hooker and gets finished? Does that put an absolute wrench and maybe, you know, five wrenches into the UFC's plans for Chandler? And, like, what happens then? Does that just break the internet? Like, Chandler just gets KO'd?
No, it doesn't break the internet, but basically it sets him up to fight the loser of Connor, Dustin, or he fights Tony. Basically, any which way it goes, he still gets somewhat of a big fight in his second fight. Now, if he loses his second fight, that's where we got to start wondering, like, what now what is the UFC going to do with him now? What you think, Evan?
I think honestly, that's a tough question to even answer, to be honest. I'm really thinking of, like, you know, the amount of investment and just time and just effort into, you know, signing Chandler and building him up and everything. For him to lose his debut is, I think it's going to hurt him a little bit, but I think in the end, he'll bounce back. I don't know. It's a tough one. I gotta think about that one.
Now, how about this?
Yeah.
How about this? I got a question for both of you guys. And Evan, you can go first. Actually, you know what? Evan, you go after me. I'm gonna say my piece here, Evan, and then Lee, or whichever one you guys feels compelled to jump in and go first, depending on what Okay, so what I've been thinking about lately is that we're talking about all this lightweight stuff, and don't worry, we're going to talk about the flyweights. We're going to talk about the flyweights too. We're going to get to it. Don't worry about it. We're going to get to it, definitely. So talking about all this lightweight stuff, and the question is, we still have Khabib as the lightweight champion, and I was even thinking about this at work today. I was at work today, and I was, like, thinking in my head, you know, I'm doing all my stuff, I'm staying busy, you know, I'm getting tons of stuff done, and all I can think about is, man, when is the UFC going to, like, meet with Khabib and ask him to make a decision? Like, is he retired, and therefore relinquishing the belt so we can continue on the division in 2021, or is he just going to hold on to the belt for an extremely long time? I mean, now I know what you're thinking. I know you're going to say it, Lee. I know you're already thinking it. McGregor did that. You're going to say it. And if you weren't going to say it, I don't believe you.
No, I wasn't going to say it. I wasn't going to say it. I was about to throw it at your other boy, Stipe. Stipe seems to take off 4 to 6 months between fights. So I don't see the UFC pressuring Khabib anytime soon.
But I just don't understand if – but the difference with that is, though, is that Stipe never comes out and retires in the octagon after his fights, though. Stipe, it's open-ended. He just wins and then doesn't really say much after the fight. His demeanor never says that, you know, it never really gives you – there's no sign of him stopping Stipe, and – that would be the difference, I guess. Khabib literally left his gloves in the octagon and said that was his last fight. So, I mean, if that's the case, I feel like you already have your answer. Khabib's done fighting. You know, he just went and bought an MMA organization in Dagestan. Did you guys hear about that?
Yeah, but at the same time, what did Dana White say immediately after that? He was like, I feel that Khabib will be back to get the 30-0. So the UFC don't believe he's retired. You go ahead and have it jump in.
And that's actually, to add on to that point, I just watched an interview with Dana White, and he was asked about Khabib, and he said that he believes he can be very persuasive to get Khabib to come back because it was his dad's dream for him to get 30-0. But it's like, can you just let the guy retire? Like, why are we going to ruin that perfect retirement? For what? Who is he going to fight that he needs to fight that makes
you
any
sense? Already know. You already know the answer to that. You already know.
Is it a – if it's the Conor rematch, I'm going to hang
up. You know it. Bingo. Bingo.
No. Conor rematch – does not need to happen. I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want it. It's stupid. I hate it. Please don't. Please don't come back and ruin your retirement for a guy that you already beat pretty dominantly, except for one round.
Evan, you got to think about it, man. Don't think from a fan's perspective on this. Think from the UFC business perspective on this.
Too much
money. He's probably going to fight in 2021. 2021 is probably when they probably going to start probably like having some fans. And they're going to want to capitalize off having some fans. So who brings the fans out? Conor McGregor. And then the point that you said that really makes me think that is when you said Dana White said he's going to be very persuasive. So basically they're going to show Khabib the dollars.
I don't know about the dollars. I don't really think the dollars means anything to Khabib. I really don't. Like I really don't think he cares about the money. I think it just has to – appetize him competitively, because I've seen some of his interviews and just the way he talks about it, there's no competitive goal for him anymore. There's no drive. I really don't know what Dan is supposed to say to him to get him to want to rematch Conor, because that's the only fight for him to do. And it hurts me to say that, because not for nothing, if I may real quick, a rematch with Dustin does not excite me at all. The fight was okay.
Maybe.
Wasn't really anything exciting. The Tony Ferguson fight has lost all spice. There's no pepper in the pasta. It's done. The GSP fight is never happening, and people need to get over that fight. Charles Oliveira is not known enough by the casual McGregor fans or Khabib fans for them to want that fight. So, to your point, as you already know this, the only fight is the Conor rematch, but Khabib beat him. He made him quit. He tapped him out. Competitively, what does Khabib gain there? Nada. I'm literally, like, trying to, like, go deep into my mind to figure out what Dana is supposed to say to this man to get him to fight Conor again. And this is all if Conor wins, which I think he will. I think he, you know, he really wants that rematch, but I don't know. Talk to me. Sell me this rematch.
So I'm not trying to sell you the rematch. Lee can sell you the rematch. Surprisingly enough, you would think I'm supposed to be the one that's supposed to sell you the rematch. Lee would probably tell you that I'm the one that's going to sell you the rematch. I'm not sure how the table is turning. He's selling the rematch. He might actually be the president now of the McGregor fan club. He might actually be, or I'm the president, and he is the spokesperson. He's the spokesperson for the McGregor fan club. He's the secretary, at least. All right. He's the secretary. He's a PR guy. He's a PR guy for the McGregor fan club, man. That's who you are. Lee's a PR guy. But no. So what I'm trying to say is that what if the UFC? Now this is kind of going backwards from what I was saying before. What if the UFC has been banking on Chandler winning his way to a Khabib fight this entire time, and having Khabib versus Chandler for his 30-0?
Actually, that would probably. It wouldn't be as big of a fight as with Conor, but it would be a big fight because guess what? You would get the crossover fans from Bellator. The Bellator fans would actually want to watch Chandler versus Khabib to see whether or not the former Bellator champion could beat the current UFC champion. I think that fight will probably be more interesting, and have the crossover appeal. Although Conor is a big draw, and the only reason I throw Conor name out there, Keys, is because I just been thinking the way the UFC been thinking here lately. The UFC is all about eyes on their product, and as far as making fights, they think that fans want to see. And not us, the real deal fans, the hardcore fans, it's the casual fans. They don't cater to the hardcore fan anymore. That's why I threw out the Conor fight. But I do think the Chandler-Khabib fight would be a great crossover fight because it would draw the Bellator audience to the UFC product to see whether or not Chandler could really do it.
Yeah, I mean, point to what Evan was just saying about how if you really look at, you know, the potential 30-0 right there, I mean, just looking at that and seeing all the contenders, Evan made a good point about saying how if you look at all the contenders that could fight Khabib right now, there's really no intriguing matchups. I mean, he submitted, his last three fights, all submissions, you know, he submitted McGregor, submitted Gaethje, submitted Poirier. So, I mean, the only one of those which a rematch would be interesting is McGregor, being that, you know, he didn't quit, you know, in the first two rounds. But besides that fact is, you know, like you said, Oliveira, you know, doesn't appeal as much to the casual fan. So for a 30-0 Khabib fight, that's probably not a big enough fight or a big enough name for that 30-0 fight. And Khabib may not even want to come back for a guy like that, especially because when you have a guy that is, you know, like Oliveira does like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. As far as I know, he's a big Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu expert. And a guy like that, though, like, can't use that. Like, you really can't use Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu against Khabib. Like, I saw a picture the other day, and it showed Edson Barboza, who's, like, another Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy. I mean, he tends to have kicks and all this and shows more of that, but he's another Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy. And it showed the way Khabib had his legs wrapped around Barboza's legs so that Barboza, there was really no way he could move when he was in bottom position in the Khabib fight. There was just no way he could possibly move his body. And then the caption said, how is somebody supposed to use Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu from this position? And that photo made me realize, like, these dudes have no chance. Like, these Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu dudes, like, these Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belts are never going to be able to be Khabib because it's just not enough. You need a guy who's going to be able to – who's going to welcome wrestling with Khabib and possibly stop the takedowns and be able to stop some of the takedowns before they happen. But like I said, to Evan's point, there's really no interesting matchups for Khabib 30-0. So I think Chandler, the UFC, could be banking on Chandler to win his way to that title fight, and that's why they put him as the fill-in for that that last card.
Good.
I actually do like that idea. I think that makes a lot of sense. And I know Chandler wants that fight because I remember way back, and I don't know if this was when Chandler was when Khabib was champion or if it was before, but Chandler put out a tweet that he was the guy to beat Khabib, like he has the style. It's that fight excites me. Like that fight makes sense. You know, can the kid coming over from the B leagues come over and take out Khabib? You know, can he take that spotlight, those fans, and show him that he never belonged at the kids' table? He belonged with the adults.
Yep.
I like it. I'm down for it. If that's what Khabib wants to come back for, if that's what means most to him, by all means, make that fight. If the only thing he's coming back for is a Conor rematch, y'all can keep the pay-per-view. I don't want it.
Yeah, man. I think Hey, Key, that's a good point you brought up, man, because it's like we haven't seen Chandler in the UFC. So basically it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind. But if he come in there and let's say he does fight Gaethje and he wins, basically it's like, all right, well, Gaethje just fought for the belt. So what do you do with him? So, man, I'm interested, man. I'm very interested in who would they get him to fight in his first fight. I think his first fight is the setup fight. It has to be somebody they think he can beat. It can't be somebody they think will go in there and knock him out. Because then you just, basically, you're going to have to rebuild. You got to go back. It's like the Yair Rodriguez effect. Or the Lorenz Larkin. Or I can't think of his name. All them guys they bring from Bellator that they hype up, and then they lose their first two fights. And you like, damn, you should have stayed in the B League. I don't think they want that to happen to Chandler.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, the UFC had, I don't think they want to have another situation where they bring over a guy from another organization and it turns out to be more or less a failure. And,
yep.
I mean, to look back on that, I mean, I think you know where I'm going with this. We can look at Ben Askren I mean, he came in. I mean, he was in Bellator at one time. They really signed him from one championship, but he was a Bellator fighter at one time. I think he may have even fought Chandler at one time. I'm going to say he might have fought Chandler back in his Bellator days. But either way, that was kind of a failure. You know, he came in, had like a half-assed win versus Robbie Lawler, and then lost two fights in a row, getting finished. I think he got finished in both of those fights. And then that was kind of it for him. He kind of just gave up. And I don't know if he retired or not. I just don't even hear his name anymore. And that was just a failure on the UFC, and I feel like that was a bad look for the UFC. And I would think that they're hoping that this Chandler signing doesn't go in that direction.
Yeah, I think the only reason the Ben Askren thing is looked at as a failure is because of how good Demetrius Johnson is still doing over there and won. And it's like you traded
Can I ask you a quick question? Lee, has Demetrius Johnson lost yet?
No.
He's fighting for the title, I think, in February.
Yeah, he's,
so what's
he's
his record?
Fighting for the belt coming up.
Do we know what his record in one championship is at this point?
I think he's...
I want to say it's like 3-0 or 4-0.
Yeah, I think...
It's at least 3-0, I know for sure.
I will find out. He is 3-0.
Because I thought they... All right, keep going. I just wanted to ask you, keep going. I interrupted. Go ahead.
No, it's just the fact that, like you said, Ben Askren coming over from one, you know, it wouldn't have been looked at as a negative move if Demetrius Johnson would have went over there and not looked as good as he's looked, and then Askren come over here and barely beats Lawler, and then he gets dominated, what, twice? So it just looks bad because of who they traded him for. Because if you really think about it, we're going to get to the flyweight fight in a minute. But when you think about the flyweight fight, do you think I wouldn't mind seeing Demetrius Johnson versus Figueroa. I wouldn't mind seeing Demetrius Johnson versus Moreno. I mean, it's new blood in the flyweight division. But at the time he was dominating it, you know, it just wasn't no new blood. Cody Garbrandt versus Demetrius Johnson, I wouldn't mind saying that. It's just that at the time he had beat everybody and dominated everybody in such a fashion that the first time he beat him, he would beat him. The second time, he would just totally dominate him. But, you know, man, it is what it is. The Ben Askren thing was looked at as a bad move in my book, but, you know, the UFC did what they had to do.
I just want to point out that Evan is very displeased right now that you just named off that you'd want to see Demetrius Johnson versus Cody Garbrandt. Evan is very displeased by that matchup.
Well, I'm not saying I would want to see that, but being that Garbrandt was in line to fight Figueroa, don't you think they would want to throw Garbrandt in there versus Demetrius Johnson? I'm just saying.
I mean, they were trying to do that before. I'm pretty sure that was one of the original fight. It was supposed to be.
It was Dillashaw.
When Garbrandt. No, because Garbrandt won the belt. Because Garbrandt won the belt first. I thought Garbrandt wanted to. Right when he beat Cruz, he was talking about moving down, and then
he was.
You know, everything else happened.
Okay.
I don't remember that.
Go ahead.
The whole thing. I don't know if it's me, but I just don't like how champions of a higher weight class try to get a fight with a smaller champion. I just don't see that as a – like, yeah, you're the double champion, but you went down and fought the smaller dude instead of going up and fighting the bigger dude. Like, it just seems odd to me. Like, you know, you got Connor, one featherweight, then went to lightweight. You had DC, light heavy. You had even Izzy. Izzy's middleweight. He's going up to light heavy. And there's been talks of him going to heavyweight. That makes sense to me. I just don't understand why, yeah, let me just go down a weight class and fight smaller competition because that'll help my resume. I don't know. That stuff's just silly to me.
Yeah, that's what Edson Barboza did. Edson Barboza went down in weight instead of going up. He went down.
He did. Same with Michael Johnson.
Yeah. Then Aldo went down in weight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of weird to me because normally you're supposed to move up because, like, we all know that Holloway is going to eventually be a lightweight. We already know that. He's eventually going to be a lightweight. And that's the way your career actually supposed to go. You don't supposed to go in the opposite direction.
No, I agree. I think Holloway is getting smacked by Calvin Kattar. Keys already knows. And I think after that, he's going to lightweight, because it'll be a perfect addition that he leaves. Like, Holloway has been at featherweight since like 2010, 2011. Him leaving, with him gone, Conor gone, and Aldo gone, they'll be like the last true like kings at featherweight. And now featherweight will just be brand new, wide open talent. Volkanovski, Zabit, Calvin Kattar, Ortega, Shane Burgos, Sadiq Youssef, Arnold Allen,
Zombie,
and, Zombie. What's his name? What's that Thug Nasty, Bryce Mitchell? Like, there's so much talent at 45, and it's just kind of being sat there because you have Holloway just still there. But this is great. This is Holloway's send off to 55. Kattar.
Yeah, Darren Elkins, too.
Darren Elkins. There's too much talent at 45 for them to be wasting time with Holloway. Like, send him to 55, stop cutting weight, go be healthy. You just got married, you got a kid, go be healthy. Go fight at 55, brand new matchups for yourself. Featherweight gets brand new. I'm getting a little angry. I'm sorry.
I mean, that's one fight I would love. Yeah, go ahead.
But you know, it's like, to me, I like the way that division is going. They're getting younger. They're going to have a lot of young, new blood in that division. Just like Bantamweight was doing the same thing, you know, with Sanhagen, the other kid, I can't think of his name, but he ended up moving up or moving down. I don't even know. Yeah, he moved up. I can't even think of his name right now. But I like when a division is getting younger, like the light heavyweight division. Light heavyweight, outside of Glover Teixeira, you don't have the old crew in there no more. They're all new guys, new blood. So I like that point, Evan. I like that a lot. I can roll with that.
Thank you.
Okay,
if I may.
Go ahead.
No, I just want to make sure, I know with the, we got a little bit of time left. I wanted to know if we wanted to break down the main card for the fights this weekend, because there's a lot of good fights, and I'd love to talk about them.
Let's talk about the flyweight fight first.
Go ahead. Let's do it.
Go ahead, Keith. Start us off.
Oh, I was muted that whole time. My fault. I mean, we actually already ran out of time. We already went over time, I mean, if we're being honest. Yeah, we already went over time. I was muted. I was trying to tell you that, but it didn't seem like I was muted, so nobody could hear me.
All right, well, let's talk about
We don't have enough time to talk about. Yeah, we could run through one of those real quick. Or give picks for the main event or something, but we don't have time to do two of those things. I mean, I don't have time to do two of those things.
All right. Well, I'm gonna start off on the flyweight belt, man. I thought Brandon Moreno won the fight. I thought he won the second, third, and fourth rounds for sure. How they came up with a majority draw is some BS. And when I looked at the scorecards, they kind of finagled their way into that draw by when Figueiredo had the point deduction. See how all the judges scored that round 9-9? And that's the only way they could have did that, because if Moreno would have won that round, it would have automatically been a 10-8 round. So basically, they kind of fudged that round by making it a draw, by giving Figueiredo a 9-9 round. And I think that was the that was the flaw in the scoring that made it a majority draw. And it shouldn't have been that way. I still think Moreno won that round.
I agree 100%. Plus, apparently, the way that, adding to your point on the scorecards, the fifth round, I admit the fifth round should have, like, it went to Figgy. I think if you go back and watch it, he just landed more because the commentary.
He was desperate.
What's that?
He was desperate.
Yeah, yeah, Figgy had a good, but what's crazy is the judges gave Moreno the fifth round, and according to the scorecards, if the judge that gave Moreno the fifth round didn't give him the fifth round, then Figgy would have just won the fight. Even with the point deduction, it still would have went to Figgy. So, like how you were saying how you think Brandon won the fight, the way the judging works is it was a bad call on the fifth round, and Figgy won that fight altogether, which I think is absurd. I agree with you. I think Brandon had round two, three, and four, and especially with the point deduction, which I don't understand why it was a 9-9. I think that was ridiculous, but that's besides the point.
Man, come on, man. You know what kills me about the UFC? They love doing this with these champions, man. They love doing this. Like, these dudes lose clearly, and then the only argument to be made is, oh, well, you know when they're the champion, you know, it always leans towards the champion. And it's like, bro, what kind of judging is that? Like, if the champion lost, they lost. You know, this reminds me of John Jones' fight with, what's his name, who Blachowicz just knocked out. When he fought that dude, I think that dude beat Jones very clearly, very clearly. And they gave Jones the fight, unanimous decision. How? How was that? How did all three judges? What, man, what the hell fight? Yo, if you were getting backed up the entire fight, I don't understand how you won the fight in the first place. That's my first point of emphasis. Point two is Figueiredo. When I was going into the fifth round of that fight, we were going into the fifth round, I said out loud, I was like, Figueiredo needs a finish here. He needs a finish. He's going to lose the belt. That was my thought in my mind, because I'm pretty sure going into round five, I had Moreno up 3-1. I had him up 3-1, and then you're saying that they gave Moreno round five. So he would have won 4-1. I don't remember who I had winning round five, because I think I kind of looked at it like neither one of them really did enough to really best the other in the round, because it just looked like they were both exhausted and were just trying to make it through the last 5 minutes, because they really threw out everything they had in the first four rounds. Figueiredo looked like he faded after the second round. When he came out in the third round, you could visibly see that he was already a different fighter. He didn't think, and the commentary pointed it out too. I forget who it was, but they said Figueiredo looks like he didn't expect Moreno to still be here in the third round, because he is used to finishing guys early on in the first or second round. And Moreno's a warrior. He's not going to just get knocked out like that, you know, or he's not just going to get tapped like that. And I think Figueiredo wasn't prepared for that. I don't think his cardio is where it needs to be. And that's the thing that I don't think is fair, to just put the champion. It's like, if the competitor clearly was ahead in to many degrees, you know, you did not see Moreno fade. You know, I want to say I started to see Moreno fade in the fifth round. Like, after he fought for 20 minutes, I started to see him look different in the fifth round when he was dead. Like, that, and they gave him that round. So I don't think this champion bias is starting to kill me, man, because these fights are getting more and more ridiculous. The champions clearly lose, and they still win.
And actually, Keys, he didn't fade. He said his shoulder, something had happened to his left shoulder. Because remember in the broadcast, they said they thought he had broke his left forearm. They thought he had broke it. But he said something had happened with his shoulder, and that's why he couldn't, like, really throw punches in the fifth round, because something happened to his shoulder. But still, even then, it was like like what Evan said, Figgy was just desperate in the fifth round, so he was throwing a lot more punches because he felt he was behind. He was losing the fight. So, man, I was so disappointed, bro, because Moreno did everything possible to win that fight. The first round, you know, I think it was a filling out round for him. But once he tagged Figgy in the second round, that kind of like built his confidence. Because then you saw him, he wasn't throwing just one punch. He was throwing two and three punch combinations every time he tagged Figgy. And every time Figgy would take him down, he was right back to his feet. I just don't know how they scored that fight, man. The way the judging was in that fight was a travesty, bro. It was a travesty.
I mean, and when you look at this, I actually pulled up the stats right here. So it said the final stats for Figueiredo versus Moreno is this. So Moreno landed 132 significant strikes. Figgy landed 137, so extremely close right there. But Moreno landed 132 out of 139 total strikes landed. So only 7 of his total strikes landed were not significant strikes. For Figueiredo, he landed 147, 137 of those were significant strikes, so 10 of which were not significant. But his significant striker percentage was 57 compared to Moreno's 53. But at the same time, when we're ruling takedowns heavily, in some of these fights, you're seeing one guy edge the striking or dominate the striking, but then the wrestler, you know, they weigh more heavily on the takedowns more than the strikes. Moreno had landed 4 takedowns to Figueiredo's 2. So if the striking was so close, how did the takedowns Moreno not outweigh, you know what I'm saying? How did that not play a factor there? And when you look at that, I mean, head strikes landed, Moreno was 118 to Figueiredo's 93. You know what I mean? Figueiredo landed more to the body, and Figueiredo had more leg kicks. You know, strikes at distance, Moreno had more.
In
3 minutes and 19 seconds, Moreno had 3 minutes because we like to look at control time because they weighed control time. When you look at the title fight, they had Demetrius Johnson and Cejudo, the rematch. They said one of the main reasons Cejudo, they gave him the decision was because of all the control time he had. And you said he didn't do that much with the top position. He wasn't transitioning. He wasn't really doing anything from top position, but they still call it control time because he was still in top position. So even like what Oliveira did to Ferguson, that was just all control time. You know, he probably had 13 minutes of control time in the fight. So how come in those fights it weighs so heavily, but in this title fight it doesn't? Moreno has 3 minutes and 19 seconds of control time. Figueiredo had 55. I'm just saying.
But it goes back to something that I've been harping about. I know the judges scoring adds to the excitement of the fight or the unknown of the fight. But why not let us know what the judges scored the first round? That way we can get a feel for what the judges feel is important. You know what I'm saying? If just give us the first round. You ain't got to give us the whole fight, but just give us the first round so we can get a feel, man. But that judging was just bad to me, bro.
I think this, when you have these title fights like this, I think you've made this point before not that long ago, and I think it needs to happen. I mean, we've already established that we think boxing has it right with showing you the unofficial scorecards. And different judging panels have their own unofficial scorecards, and they'll show you them per round, and you'll see what they have, you know, with this considering the significant strikes landed after each round. So we already decided that boxing has that right. But another thing that I think they should do, which I haven't seen in boxing, but I have actually seen in other content, you know, is the judges will explain their decision. Each judge individually will have to explain their decision and they kind of have to give you their analysis of the fight and then explain how they came to the decision. And it would go through the panel of judges at the end of the fight. So they have to justify themselves.
The UFC will never do that. It's a good idea, and actually I do like that, but the UFC will never do it. And the reason the UFC will never do it is because then you are basically making the judges more part of the fight than they need to be. Just like referees, we don't like the referee to be part of the fight. Your job as the referee is to basically keep the action going. If the fight becomes about the referee, we don't like that. And I don't think, and I think that's one of the reasons why the UFC will probably not go to it, because they don't want judges to be part of the quote unquote fight. Or even though they already are, but they don't want them to be a bigger part of the fight than they already are.
No, I get your point on that. Yeah, that makes sense. No, I can see why they wouldn't want to do it when you look at that. But when you look at it from that angle. But, you know, I think the biggest reason why it was good for the UFC and why they would be okay with a judge's decision of a majority draw for that fight is because they can make a rematch. And the rematch will be bigger. It'll be even bigger. Because that was probably an all-time classic fight. A lot of people are saying that was the best flyweight fight in UFC history. And I don't think that's a bad thing to say that. I mean, because I haven't seen every flyweight fight in history, but I know that was the best flyweight fight I've ever seen. The best flyweight fight I had seen before that one was another Moreno fight, was Moreno's fight with Kai Kara Brandt. That was the best flyweight fight I had ever seen until this one. You know, this one beat that one, but they are both really good fights. This one may be blowing that one out of the water a little bit, but they're both very good fights. I think if things were most legitimate, Brandon Moreno would be the flyweight champion right now. If things were most legitimate, and everything was weighed, you know, the way it should be weighed, and what happened in the fight and how the rounds went, I think he would be the champion, and he would be defending the belt versus Figueiredo in a rematch that would still be happening. So you'd still have the rematch. But I think Moreno should be defending his title in the rematch. That's how I think it should be. But either way, we're going to get a good rematch, and it's going to be, you know, 10 times bigger. The flyweight division is back, and Figueiredo is the one that saved it. Not Cejudo. Figueiredo saved it. So that's another point for another day, but that did need to be said. I mean, we went way over time here. I do appreciate these longer shows, these shows that are a bit longer. But it's nice because we get to so many different topics, you know, and there's so many topics, especially, you know, we don't do rundowns and we just kind of go. And we have so many of our own, you know, talking points we want to get to. And we were able to get to a ton of talking points here. You know, Evan was able to get to a lot of his talking points. You know, Lee's able to bounce, you know, a lot of we're able to bounce a lot of our ideas off each other. So that's really dope to me. I really enjoy that. And I think this was a really good show. You know, I appreciate y'all for listening. We've definitely been talking about, you know, we've definitely gotten into serious talks about moving to our new platform. You know, we had been talking about that, you know, over the summer and, you know, during the fall a little bit too. We had touched on that we were going to be doing that, and we're still going to be doing that. We're going to move over to a new platform for the new year. If it doesn't happen, you know, right away, it will be happening. If not, first of the year, but if anything late, it'll be happening. If anything by late January, early February, we'll be moved over and we'll have made the transition to a new platform. And I'm still putting out great content like we always do. So yeah, that's all I got. I'm sorry we didn't get to review this weekend's fight card, but there were so many things to talk about, and we do get a little carried away, but it's we get carried away in a good way. So you know, maybe we'll put out something on our Twitter timeline. Maybe we'll throw some predictions out there. Maybe I'll even post a video with my predictions to my Twitter timeline, you know, for the fights, and we'll make up for that with that. So yeah, but that's all I got. Either one of you guys want to take it away.
Hey, Evan. Evan, I know you really want to talk about this card, man. So, hey, Keys, I don't know whether or not you busy tomorrow, but Evan, if you really want to talk about this card, man, I don't have anything going on tomorrow, and we could jump on and do the talk about this card if you want to.
Yeah, no, I will. That'd be great, actually. I'll shoot you a text tomorrow. Tomorrow, that'd be great. Yeah, no, I would love to. I'd love to talk about it. It's a really good card. I really want the.
I just looked at the card, and it is a pretty dope card. So, yeah, we can just hit me up tomorrow, and we can talk about it.
Absolutely.
Hit the text up that I established with all of us on it, and we can talk about it.
Sounds good.
But like my man Key said, we went over tonight. But, you know, man, sometimes we get spirited with our conversations. Like my man Key said, we don't do a rundown. We get up here, and we just talk MMA. And, you know, it's fun. So tonight we did go over. I'm going to keep the closing short. Stay tuned. We might, for sure, at least me and Evan will jump on tomorrow. I don't know when that Key's going to jump on tomorrow, but we definitely have a show tomorrow to preview the fight card coming up on Saturday. Till then, everybody have a good time. Be safe. Take care of each other. Wear your mask. Practice social distance. Key's, get ready for that snow, man. Get ready for that snow. I hope you got food. You got drink. You got water. And you're going to be good, man. So don't worry about that snow. Don't let it get you down. Everybody have a good night. Lee Keys and Evan signing off. As always, peace.